How many of you are familiar with Kevin Durant's acceptance speech this week? Oh yeah, I see several hands. Well, not a whole lot of hands. Well, Kevin Durant was he was chosen as NBA's most valuable player, and when he gave his acceptance speech, he really turned it into a tribute to the love, devotion, and motivation he received from his mother. And ultimately, at the end of the speech, he said it was about her. She was the real MVP. Of course, it was a very emotional speech, and in one sense it was timely, but the Oklahoma City Thunder superstar really gave his mother a lot of credit for where he was in life, that she pushed him if they were supposed to do, now I've forgotten the details, but say it was 10 layups, well, she would have him do 15, you know, or she would have him push himself and do more and more and more and more. So he really gave her a lot of recognition. Of course, we know that Mother's Day is tomorrow, as we heard in the sermon as well. The phone lines on Mother's Day are typically jammed with sons and daughters calling their mother and calling to thank her and show their appreciation and their love. I think one AT&T estimate is that there are 122 million phone calls to mom made on Mother's Day every year. So that's quite a bit. A couple of other things that they found, they said about 11% never call their mother. That was a higher percentage than I thought it was going to be. And about 3%, 68% or definitely in this survey were definitely going to call their mother. And out of that 68%, 3% were going to call or collect. Now, before you laugh too much, if you're a poor college student, how are you going to call your mother if you don't have a calling card, right? So maybe let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Oh, cell phones now. Yeah, okay, I know. It's a different world these days, isn't it? But anyway, there's a lot of communication that takes place on Mother's Day. And I was interested in the story of Anna Jarvis. I had read that as well, that she was instrumental in getting Mother's Day recognized as a national holiday, and then spent the rest of her life a few years later trying to get rid of it because of what it had become. Quite a little unusual, I thought. I'd like to kind of follow on the same theme today of talking about mothers. I'd like to take a look, first of all, at some things that God says about mothers, and in a sense, women in general, but specifically mothers, and then explore the example of two famous mothers in the Bible and see if there are some lessons that we can learn from those and see what we can pick up from that. First of all, let's take a look at, and of course, Mother's Day is a day that quite often flowers are involved, and that was part of what got Anna Jarvis upset, was that it became so commercialized. But we're going to take a look at a couple of things here. First of all, I'd like to go to Genesis. Let's go to Genesis chapter 1, something God says about mothers. In Genesis chapter 1, and actually this is a more generic, in a sense, of God's view of women in general. And I realize that not all women are mothers, but all mothers are women. So we will approach this from the more general perspective to begin with. Now, I know you know this verse, but as I read these two verses, Genesis chapter 1 and verses 26 and 27, I want to take a little different focus than I think we've often taken on this. God says, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them..." Interesting switch from the man singular to them plural, which implies very strongly the implication is not just males, but humanity. That this is what it's talking about. When it says man, make man, it's really talking about humanity. Let's make humans in our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female. He created them. So again, the implications, I think there are a number of things that stand out very quickly in this, to me at least. It's interesting to note in this particular passage, if you remember the creation account in chapter 1, where is gender introduced? In all of the instruction or all of the account of creation of birds and fishes and land animals, there is no mention of male and female. There is no mention of gender until you come to human beings. Now, I find that rather interesting to think about. It is, in that sense, irrelevant in terms of the other creatures. Not irrelevant in the sense that there must be male and female or there must be a way for them to reproduce. But in God's eyes, God is elevating gender when it comes to human beings. There is a difference that is implied in the fact that he says nothing about gender with the animals, but he does with human beings. When he created male and female, he created them. We look also at this point. He says, let them have dominion. Obviously, this is something that sets humans apart from the animals. We have dominion as human beings. It is our responsibility in God's eyes to oversee the rest of the creation. Now, we could go a lot of different directions with that in terms of how man has done with that, how human beings have done. But it is an important point to make that in one sense, we are on the God level in the sense of having dominion. God has dominion over everything, the whole universe. But God has specifically handed human beings dominion of this planet. In that sense, we are in the likeness of God. We are in the image of God because we have dominion. And both genders are said to be in the image and likeness of God. Let's make them. Now, in the second verse, in verse 27, he specifically mentions image twice instead of image and likeness, and I don't know that we can parse that so carefully as to make some big point about that, except just to point out that, again, it's male and female that's in the image of God. Male and female, it's them that God is talking about. There is no lesser being. I know we've talked about the war of the genders, but there really is no gender war in God's mind. I mean, there is no lesser being, male or female. In God's eyes, we are both potential members of his family. And he didn't make humans where there are men and then there are lesser beings called females, or there are females and then there are these lesser beings, these kind of knuckle-dragging Neanderthals that we call men. Neither one takes the right perspective. From God's perspective, God's perspective is they're in my image. Male and female are in my image. And the last point I think that is important for us to think about is this being in God's image, male and female, includes many things. And I know there's been a lot written over the years. The Catholic Church in particular wrote a lot about or has written a lot about image and likeness and being in the image of God. And a lot of Protestant writers have written about it too. And I don't need to get off into a lot of that except to say that we obviously think of many of the things that God does that human beings also do, maybe on a lower, lesser scale, but we also are involved in those things. We're involved in dominion. We're involved in creativity. God created. God made human beings where we also have that ability to think things through and to come up with new ideas and to create things. Now, we say, well, we didn't really create. I mean, we didn't really create all of the stuff that we see. We just changed the molecules, the stuff that was already there, and rearranged it into something different. Okay, fair enough. But without some thought and mental process going into how to make this microphone and make it where it did something in a sound system, it would just be a piece of metal. So there is a creativity that God has given man, and we share that in one sense with him to a certain degree. Intellect, emotions, the ability to have relationships and interact in those relationships and to strengthen those relationships or damage those relationships. Imagination, there are lots of different things that we could say. Okay, these are all issues, all things that we share with God. So I think it's important for us to make that point to begin with in terms of God's perspective, men and women. Women are in God's image just like men are. Now, I'd like you to think about that when we think about this, that we both are in the image of God, whether we're male or female. Both genders are in his image. Let's look at something else that God says. This is an interesting passage to me when I think about this. Isaiah chapter 49, let me turn and read this. Isaiah 49, verses 14 and 15. Isaiah 49:14 says, "But Zion said, the Lord has forsaken me, and my God," or "my Lord has forgotten me." And verse 15 is like God's response to this. He says, "Can a woman forget her nursing child and not have compassion on the son of her womb? Surely they may forget, yet I will not forget you." What he's alluding to here is sort of that maternal instinct that a mother, one of God's created beings who is in the image of God, tends to have. God is saying, even if a mother forgets her child and doesn't have compassion and doesn't love that child and doesn't want to nurture that child, I'm not going to forget you. Can a mother do that? We might say, well, yes, there are some mothers who do, but I think we're talking in generalities. In generalities, the generality is that mothers have that maternal instinct. And in general, more of this characteristic of God, because God is saying, this is the way I am. I don't forget my children. I have this nurturing attitude and feeling toward my children, that I want the very best for them, and I care for them deeply, and I never forget them. Doesn't matter what happens in life, I still care about my children. I care about you, Zion. So, in general, God's given more of that characteristic to women. In general, he's given more of some other characteristics to men. So I think it's important for us to realize that this is a godly trait, and God gives different traits that are his traits in different degree to male or female. Let's take a look at the New Testament in Ephesians. One passage here that we didn't cover in the sermon today, but in Ephesians chapter 6, we have this statement where God inspired Paul to show that not only are we to esteem our parents, but we're also to obey them in the Lord. Chapter 6, verse 1, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother," and that quote, of course, comes from Exodus 20, Deuteronomy 5. "Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth." So God inspired Paul to say we need to honor and we need to obey both our parents. And of course, that includes our mother, that we honor and obey her. God doesn't expect us to do that, though, when it's in conflict with his law. I mean, if our mother tells us go murder someone, I think we understand God doesn't mean that's what we should go do. But he says in the Lord, obey your parents in the Lord. But a godly parent would never do such a thing anyway. But the basis of this statement of obedience of our parents goes back to the fifth commandment. It's a way of showing that honor, way of showing that respect to our mother and to our father. Respect and honor are important. And certainly we can respect and honor them in honoring the family name by doing something with our life, becoming somebody, becoming someone who is a contributing good member of society, and ultimately a part of the family of God. Certainly those are some of the far-reaching goals that parents have for their children. And of course, what if they do dishonorable things? Well, we can get way off in another tangent on this in the what ifs, in the small minority of issues. But there are times, obviously, when they don't do honorable things. By the way, can I have the hands of all of the perfect mothers? Everyone who has mothered perfectly? Who's sticking their hand? Oh. Okay, so we understand we're all human. You know, we're all working at this, and we're not perfect. So all of us are, as fathers and mothers, are going to make mistakes from time to time. But that doesn't mean we dishonor our parents. We are to honor them. And there are some special challenges if your mother's not converted or if there are some special issues. But ultimately, God wants us to honor them. He wants us to show them honor and respect. And certainly we can do that with the positive traits that we see. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 23. I want to turn there for a minute. Proverbs chapter 23 and take a look at verse 22. We read this in the, and spent a little bit of time in it, Mr. Trotter did in the sermon. Listen to your father who begot you and do not despise your mother when she is old. Now, you know, the honor and respect has to be there even when they're old. And even if your mother is no longer alive, certainly we honor and respect them by the way we talk about them. And by the way we talk to their grandchildren, our children, the way we talk to other people about them. There's a way to show honor and respect. Even if they are no longer with us. So again, I won't spend a whole lot of time on this one because we covered that a bit in the sermon. But we're to show honor and respect at all times. There's one other proverb I'd like to turn to. This is Proverbs chapter 6, just in the general, looking at parents, the importance of listening to our parents. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 20 through 23 says, "My son, keep your father's command, do not forsake the law of your mother. Bind them continually upon your heart. Tie them around your neck. When you roam, they will lead you. When you sleep, they will keep you. And when you're awake, they will speak with you. For the commandment is a lamp." Am I in the right chapter? Oh yes, that's it. Okay, it's a light and a law and reproof in the way to keep you from the wrong place. So the point is that we are to not forsake the law of our mother, keep our father's command, and not forsake the law of our mother. Here's a way of demonstrating that. I think we've probably all heard that as a child, haven't we? Listen to your mother. Listen to them. Pay them attention. Pay attention to what they're telling us and follow their directions and guidance. Listen to your father, of course, can be a part of that as well. But most especially when they're true Christians and they're trying to direct us to go the right way. Let's take a little bit of time now. I want to direct our attention to two of the very prominent mothers in the Bible. Talk about them a little bit. There are many, but I've chosen two to take a look at today. First of all, let's talk about Sarah. What does anybody know what Sarah means, what her name, means? Anybody remember? What's that? Nope. Yes? Yes. Okay, it means a princess. Some have said, well, maybe a father of, or mother of many nations, but when we go back to Genesis chapter 17, we can go back there real quickly. Genesis chapter 17. Verses 15 and 16. Then God said to Abraham, this is Genesis 17. Then God said to Abraham, "As for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name. And I will bless her." In the margin says Sarah means literally princess. "I will bless her. I will also give you a son by her. Then I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall be from her." So God changed her name, and changed the name to princess, and said there would be whole nations of people that come from her. Now, what's interesting to think about in terms of Sarah and Abraham is to realize that Abraham is called the father of the faithful. We find that in the New Testament. If he is the father of the faithful, what does that make Sarah? I mean, she is the one who was the one to beget many nations. Seems to me that she would have a certain amount of responsibility as well. In Romans chapter 4 and verses 11 and 16, you find those passages. I'm not going to take the time to turn there. But what are, let me ask for a little input here. What are some of the special characteristics of Sarah that strike you or that you think of when you think of Sarah as a mother in the Bible? Someone who's given great esteem with Abraham in the Bible. Anybody think of any particular characteristics of Sarah that stand out to you? Yes, got a hand? She showed respect to her husband. Yes, that's definitely one of the things that the Bible praises her for. In fact, I think it's in Peter, 1 Peter 3. Let's see. Yes, he begins chapter 3 talking about wives. Likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they, without a word, may be won by the conduct of their wives when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. Do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging of the hair, wearing gold, or putting on fine apparel. Not that that is bad, but he's saying don't let it only be that. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart, the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. For in this manner, in former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are if you do well and are not afraid with any terror. So God praises that inner beauty of submissive or being, perhaps we should say responsive to her husband. Some want to push that too far, and I know we could get into a long discussion of this. How far is too far of being submissive? When a man does that, expecting his wife to accept and agree with any of his preferences and wishes, then he's forgotten the next verse that says, dwell with them with understanding. Any relationship is a give and take type of situation where we have to learn to work with one another and to learn the right responses to one another. He says to give honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel as being heirs together of the grace. It's not one or the other. Again, it's heirs together of the grace of God, being able to enter into the family relationship with God and being a part of his family. That's a big topic. Again, submission does have its bounds. But in general, we should be responsive. A wife should be responsive to her husband. Certainly, we realize that this isn't under the new covenant, doesn't apply to our relationship with God. Paul made that very clear in Galatians 3 about not being male or female, but we're all one. We're viewed the same in God's eyes in Christ. But in other matters of the home, submission is good. Actually, it's really good when there's submission of both. Yes, I submit. I submit in the kitchen. It's her domain. That's only one area, but I'll tell you, that's one area I submit. I don't get into where everything is, and I learn where things are. And sometimes I help, empty the dishwasher, and I learn where things go most of the time. But that's her domain, and I let her have her domain, and I encourage her domain. There are other areas as well, but you know what I mean, what I'm saying. There are areas where we really should be submissive to one another. Designing. Colors? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Anyway, glad to have her. It's a great blessing. Flowering pots, flowering shrubs and plants. Anyway, be easy to get off track here. But submission, that is certainly an area. Anything else about Sarah that we think of that stands out of the Bible? Yes. Yes, exactly. She's credited with having faith. She is listed among all of these heroes of faith. If you look at that in Hebrews 11, it's verse 11. It says, by faith Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed. And she bore a child when she was past the age because she judged him faithful who had promised. So she was faithful. She had faith. She judged God faithful. Now, what do we remember about Sarah when God first said she was going to have a child? She laughed, didn't she? Yes. But before we judge her too harshly, who else laughed when God said, you're going to have a child? Abraham. They both laughed when that happened, didn't they, when God told them. In fact, maybe we ought to remind ourselves of that. Genesis 18, I think, is the one where we find Sarah. Chapter 17 is where we find, prior to that, Abraham laughed. Genesis 17. So it's not a matter that their faith was perfect the first time they heard God make this statement, but the fact that she is listed in Hebrews 11 shows her faith grew, and she did have the faith to believe him ultimately when he said he was going to do this. Let's see, Genesis 18, I guess, verse 9 is they asked for Sarah, his wife, and let's skip down to verse 11. Abraham and Sarah were old, well advanced in age, and Sarah had passed the age of childbearing. Therefore, Sarah laughed within herself, saying, "Am I, after I've grown old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord, also being old, and, you know, have the pleasure of childbirth and raising a child and all that's involved in that?" And the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh, saying, 'I'll surely bear a child since I'm old'? Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son." But Sarah denied it, saying, I didn't laugh, for she was afraid. But he said, "No, but you did laugh." You know, you did laugh. I know it. You laughed. Now, it says in the previous couple of verses earlier, it says she laughed within herself. So I don't know whether it was an external ha-ha kind of a thing or whether it was an internal. But regardless, God knew it and said, you laughed. But it's nothing new, because you go back to the previous chapter in chapter 17. Here's where we find the example of Abraham. God has appeared to him, and we already read verse 15 about changing Sarah's name, and she'll be the mother of many nations. And verse 17, Abraham's response to this, that Sarah is going to have a child and be the mother of nations, Abraham fell on his face and laughed. He laughed. And he said in his heart, "Shall a child be born to a man who is 100 years old, and shall Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child?" And of course, then Abraham asked for Ishmael to be the one, and God said, "No, it's not going to be Ishmael. It's going to be a son." And guess what? Since you laughed, verse 19, "Note, Sarah, your wife, will bear a son, and you shall call his name Isaac." And what does Isaac mean? Laughter. Okay, you want to laugh about this? Go ahead and laugh. You're going to name your son Laughter. So when you have this son in your old age and Sarah in her old age, you can both laugh together and you can remember that both of you laughed. What's interesting in this, I find it very nice. When we go to chapter, 21, chapter 21. The Lord visited Sarah just as he had said in verse 1. She conceived, bore a son. And verse 3, Abraham called the name of his son Isaac, since God had told him to name it Isaac. Abraham, verse 5, was 100 years old when he was born. And verse 6, and Sarah said, "God has made me laugh, and all who hear will laugh with me." She said, "Okay, we can all laugh about this now." Yes, I did. I it was hard to believe. God said it, and I ultimately did accept it, and I did believe him, but yeah, you can laugh along with me now, because that's his name. It's Laughter. We're going to remember this all this time. So she also said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? For I've borne a son in my old age. So God named the child Laughter, and Sarah seemed to be able to have a good laugh about it herself and realize this was a tremendous blessing from God. But she did have faith. Now, what else might we say about Sarah? What other characteristic stands out in your mind? Well, there's one that we don't specifically have mentioned in the Bible, but one that I've thought about quite a bit over the years is I've noticed that women like things to kind of be settled in their nest, so to speak. Now, some are more careful or more comfortable moving that nest from place to place. Some like that nest to stay where it is and not have to move it around. Sarah was one who was willing to move. She was committed to Abraham. She was committed to the marriage. She was committed to the family. And wherever Abraham took her, she was willing to go. I read nothing in all of the information about all of the travels of Abraham about Sarah saying, "No, I don't want to go there. Are you sure you want us to go travel to this place or that place? Why do we have to go there? Why can't we stay here?" None of that. So I would say there was commitment. Here's a map. This is from the Holman Christian Standard Bible maps, actually out of the PC Study Bible. But take a look at all the places that Sarah was willing to move her nest along this route with Abraham. Now, the scale up near the top shows 200 miles, and I'll tell you that 200 miles is roughly a couple of inches. And when you put a ruler to this map, I don't know how accurate it is, but it turns out to be roughly 600 miles from Ur up to Haran, based on that particular scale, and therefore roughly 600 miles from there down to Beersheba, down in the south. So about a 1,200-mile journey in all that they covered, and how many times back and forth in different places. I don't have all the details of the travels, but quite a bit of traveling, quite a bit of being willing to pick up the tent, pick up the belongings, and move to another location. Let's talk about one other lady, another mother in the Bible. Let's talk about Mary. Now, I know some religions get off on a wrong foot, and Catholics in particular talk about worshiping Mary. And we know that's wrong. We're not to worship anyone but God. But she is another example of a very important mother in the Bible, a lady, a woman who had a very important role to play, obviously, in the birth and in the early training years of our Savior, Jesus Christ. What can you think of in terms of characteristics about Mary that stand out to you? Anything in particular as you think about her and her role that God gave her? Yes, Penny. All right. There was a kind of a trust in her mind and a belief in God. Well, let it be as you say. You know, how's this going to happen? And then God told her. She said, okay, well, whatever you say, however you say it. So there's a kind of a trust. What else might we think of in Mary's example? Pardon? A virtue, okay. Certainly virtue for God to pick her. Think about this. Jesus Christ is the only one that got to pick his mother. Right? None of us picked our mother. I got a good one, by the way, so this is no negative at all, but I got a wonderful mother. But we didn't pick our mother. Jesus Christ did, and he said, that's the one I want. Think about that from Mary's perspective. She was the one chosen to be. Okay, somebody else. Oh, Ms. Trotter, had your hand up. Yes, right. Some of you up front maybe didn't hear that, but he mentioned the interaction between Mary and Jesus Christ as he was a young man. At the beginning of his ministry, Mary, his mother comes up to him and says, they're out of wine. And his response is, what do I have? So what's that to me? Or it says, what do I have to do with you, woman, or something like that. It's an idiom, but doesn't make sense to us. But in essence, it's saying, so, you know? And then Mary goes and tells the servants, whatever he says to do, do it. You know, so she knew that he had the power to do what was needed to provide more wine. And he did. He didn't disappoint his mother. Interesting interaction. Let's go to the example here in Luke's account, Luke chapter 1, the birth of Jesus Christ, because I think it does point out a couple of things. It does point out her trust, her willingness to accept what God said. But let's see, verse 26, the angel Gabriel was sent by God to the city of Galilee to a virgin, and mentions her name was Mary. In verse 28, and having come in, the angel said to her, rejoice, highly favored one. The Lord is with you. Blessed are you among women. But when she saw him, she was troubled at his saying. I found that interesting to pause and reflect on. It wasn't that she was so surprised at the way he looked. Suddenly this angel appears to her. It wasn't the appearance of an angel that shocked her as much as what he said. What kind of a greeting is this? What do you mean, highly favored? I'm nobody. There's a humility that immediately comes across in Mary. That what are you saying? Highly favored one. I've found favor with God. Blessed among women. And then the angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. And behold, you will conceive in your womb and bring forth a son, and shall call his name Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Highest." So, you know, this is the explanation of what is going to happen, and that she is going to have the Son of God, the Son of the Highest, and the Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end. Then Mary said to the angel, "Well, how can this be, since I don't know a man? I am a virgin. How can this be?" There was not a sense of disbelief, but a sense of incredulity of, "Well, I don't understand, you know. What are you telling me? What are you saying?" And the angel answered and said, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Highest will overshadow you. Therefore also that Holy One who is to be born will be called the Son of God. Now indeed Elizabeth, your relative, has also conceived a son in her old age, and this is now the sixth month for her that was called barren." So, verse 37, let's keep going, two more verses. "For with God nothing shall be impossible. Then Mary said, 'Behold, the maidservant of the Lord. Let it be to me according to your word.'" You said it, it'll happen. there's no disbelief, there's a trust. Well, if that's what you say is going to happen, let it be. Let it be that way. And notice she said, "I'm your maidservant. I'm nobody. I'm your servant, but if that's what God has chosen, if that's what God says he's going to do, then okay, I'll accept that." I think there's another aspect that we find in the life of Mary, another part. We certainly see humility, we see trust. I think there's a third thing that comes through in her greeting or her statement when she comes to see Elizabeth. That begins in verse 39 and 40, that Mary came and the babe, John, leaped in Elizabeth's womb. And Elizabeth began talking to Mary, telling her she was very blessed. And let's go down to verse 46. It says, "And Mary said, 'My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit has rejoiced in God my Savior, for he has regarded the lowly state of his maidservant. For behold, henceforth all generations will call me blessed. For he who is mighty has done great things for me, and holy is his name.'" Yeah, there's sort of an attitude, or at least it comes across to me as an expression of gratitude, appreciation. Wow, you know, when I see what God is doing, people through all generations are going to remember me as the mother of the Son of God. That's an incredible thing. A fantastic thing. There seems to be an expression, and she, of course, pulls a lot of these or quotes from various other scriptures. But I would say appreciation or gratitude is another characteristic that stands out to me, at least, from her response to Elizabeth in terms of realizing that she was going to bear the actual Son of God. Any other thoughts in terms of Mary? Those are the characteristics, at least, that sort of stood out to me as I read back through this. Well, these are only two of the mothers of the Bible. There are many others who set wonderful examples and had wonderful traits. But I hope this discussion has been helpful in reiterating God's teaching about honoring our parents, and particularly mothers, that God views them, male and female in that sense, on the same plane in terms of our relationship with God, in terms of our salvation. And certainly it's a part of what God says to make life go well for us if we will show that honor to our mother and to our father. Oh, another comment? Yes. Oh, yes. Certainly. Turned to John and said, "Behold your mother." He wanted to make sure she was taken care of. So even in his death, he was thinking of her and caring for her. Good point to bring up. Anything else? Okay.